Thank you, Jerry. And ordinarily, we would turn it over to you, but it wouldn't be fair to go to a caller when we're this hard up against the clock. So if you're on hold, stay on hold. And if you're not on hold, get on hold. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays were 17-17, now 18-24. They have lost 7 of 8. The last couple have just been absolutely heartbreaking. 3 blown saves this week for the Blue Jays. Blue Jays talk is upon us. It's the Honda Postgame Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Council.
No one does the Blue Jays like us because no one else can. Home of Toronto Blue Jays baseball. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Back here at Rogers Center, the Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Jays get one whole hit after the fourth inning, and it was Justin Smoke's single into the right field corner with two out in the bottom of the ninth inning. Checking the scoreboard, that Sportsnet out-of-town scoreboard, the Yankees have lost 3-2 to the Washington Nationals. The Tampa Bay Rays have lost 2-1 to the Atlanta Braves. The Boston Red Sox are trailing the Texas Rangers 2-1 in the bottom of the eighth, and the Baltimore Orioles lost 4-2 to the Seattle Mariners. So if Texas finishes the job, that means that all five teams in the American League East will have lost tonight, which happened, I think, also on the weekend. Very interesting what's going on this season. The Yankees and Rays share first place in the division despite being only 3 games over 500 at 22-19. And amazingly, while the Blue Jays have lost 7 of 8, I think they've actually gained a half game in the standings. They were 5 back at one point, and now they're 4.5 games out of first place, which is kind of ridiculous, but fitting into the whole ridiculous way this season is going, at least the last week and a half, as the Jays have lost 7 out of their last 8 games to fall to 18-24. We are going to Blue Jays talk it up on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and sportsnet.ca/590, and the Rogers Radio app, and Rogers Digital Cable Channel 904, taking your calls all the way to 11 o'clock Eastern Time, so make sure you stick with us. This series wraps up tomorrow night. We're on the air at 7 o'clock Eastern for a 7:07 first pitch. The knuckleballer, R.A. Dickey, trying to rebound off just a terrible start in Houston. Last time out, he's up against Matt Shoemaker, the Angels righty. The Blue Jays need a win for a series split. You've been listening to Home Hardware, Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. For Jerry Howarth, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, and Frank Head, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night from Rogers.
Tighten up your batting gloves and get in the box. Toronto Blue Jays baseball continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Valencia pounds one deep left field. Back jumping is Matt Joyce. It's over his head, off the fence, base hit. Around third base, heading home, Ezekiel. Here's the throw, the head first slide. Pereira scores. A double by Valencia, and it's a 3-run fourth. Here's the Blue Jays lead the Angels 3-1.
All three of those runs coming with two out, and that's when times were good for the Blue Jays. They had that 3-1 lead into the fifth. Mike Trout took Drew Hutchison deep, cut the Blue Jays lead to 3-2, and it was still 3-2 going into the seventh inning when Carlos Perez hit a ground ball off the glove of Hutchison for an infield single. Taylor Featherston tried to bunt him over, but Edwin Encarnacion made a terrific play through to second to get the lead runner. And then Eric Ibar, after a wild pitch, after a stolen base and a wild pitch, pardon me, for Featherston, stolen base and then a wild pitch got him a third. Ibar hits a ground ball to short. The infield's playing in. The Angels have the contact play on. Ryan Goins comes home. Featherston is nailed at the plate. Two out and a runner on first, and Mike Trout comes up again. And Hutchison pitches him carefully, walks him on four pitches, and he's done. In comes Steve Delabar to face Mark Krause, who I want to see if I can get it. I can't get you his exact batting average because my math on the fly skills are not that good. But Mark Krause was 1-for-14 as he stood in for the season. And Mark Krause hit a splitter that didn't get into the dirt into the gap in left center for a two-run double, gave the Angels the lead. And that was it. That was the third blown save for the Blue Jays in 7 days, seventh blown save of the season. And the offense didn't help, shutting down after the fourth inning. The Jays only got one hit after the fourth, and that was Justin Smoak's pinch hit single with two out in the ninth inning. Last night, the Blue Jays only got one hit after the fourth inning, a single by Russell Martin. Now, the Jays very obviously aren't playing with all hands on deck. The fact that Chris Colabello and Ezekiel Carrera both have to play the outfield, or Danny Valencia. Today it was all three of them because Kevin Pillar hadn't had a day off all season. And he's been struggling at the plate too. So you have Valencia, Colabello, Carrera, Ryan Goins, and Steve Tolleson, who are minuses offensively against right-handed pitching. While Valencia, Colabello, Tolleson are all fine against lefties. And now they're starting to get good pitching, and they're not getting enough offense, though they did score 10 runs on Monday night. It's a frustrating, frustrating time to watch these Blue Jays, and one wonders what it is they can do to right the ship. There's no real trades available because no one really wants to make a trade at this point in the season. Now, the Blue Jays aren't going to get one of those big-time starting pitchers that might be available at the deadline now because the teams that have them, very obviously, will hold on to them to increase the return that they get. And you certainly don't want to spend your entire war chest on a guy like Kyle Loesch at this point in the season. One wonders what it is that they'll do. But it seems like you really like to see them do something. We shall see. And again, amazingly, still only 4.5 games out of first place with 120 games to go. And this team isn't even close to playing well. So that's a good thing, whether you want to believe it or not. It is Blue Jays talk. So let's get to the phones. We start with Barry in Midland. Hello, Barry.
Hey, Mike. Love the show. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard. Thank you.
I wanted to just get your opinion on Boston, I believe, fired their coach when their pitching ERA was like 29th in the league and Toronto was 28th. What are your thoughts on Toronto releasing Pete Walker?
Yeah, see, I didn't get why Boston fired their pitching coach either. He was a pretty good pitching coach when they won the World Series with him a couple of years ago. And I don't think that the woes of the Red Sox pitching were on Juan Nieves. And, you know, they've made the switch, and Boston is 28th in the major leagues now in ERA since Carl Willis took over a week and a half ago. I believe that coaches, managers, and the like should only lose their jobs when they start to be bad at things that they can control. The Blue Jays starting pitching was very, very good last year under Pete Walker. Is Pete Walker doing anything?
I think we're just trying to nibble on the corners too much, and we're walking way, way too many people as our stats show.
Oh, they're definitely walking way, way too many people. Is Pete Walker walking any of them?
No, but he's a pitching coach. He's...
Right, but he can't throw the pitches for them.
No, true.
You know, he oversaw a very good starting rotation last year. He oversaw one of the best bullpens in baseball the year before. So I don't see how any of this is on Pete Walker.
And can I say anything about the league signing of Babcock?
I don't know why you would on this show.
With sports, I didn't know if he could or not.
Yeah, no, this isn't Leafs talk.
Okay.
It's Blue Jays talk.
Okay, Mike, thanks.
But thank you for the call. Believe me, you're going to get lots of chances to talk about the Maple Leafs hiring Mike Babcock as their head coach. But that's not what this show is for. And by the way, congratulations to them. Good for them. They set their target. They went out and got their guy, and we'll see if it makes a difference. Dave is in Vancouver. Dave, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike, another day in paradise out here, 75 degrees. Now, the stats don't lie, and as the boys pointed out, 2-8 in one run games, 4-22 record, you know, when they don't score more than four runs. And but you got to give the Angel team credit. It's a typical Mike Sielsa team. They don't score a lot of runs, but they scrape, they scrap, they're aggressive on the bases. And, you know, as a game was pointed out on the broadcast, I mean, you've got your closer. He's 14-15 in the games. And the setup man, he's 12 games held. I mean, you got to be impressed with that. You're right. It's AL least, and it's crazy the way the division is going. But, you know, I wanted to make a comment about John Gibbons, and it was an interview last night, and there was some articles written on it, where he reminisced about coaching in the minors and how much, you know, a great time he had and how he loved working with guys, making them better ball players, and how much he really enjoyed coaching his hometown or managing in San Antonio, et cetera. You know, you almost wondered if the guy was maybe psychic because, well, we're not going to talk about that or his subject, but with a crowd of 16,000 tonight, obviously they're losing money, just as their other sports teams lost money after January. Such being the case, I wonder if Tony Russo is reading articles or somebody else because they got $15 million for that guy. You know what it boils down to is a great Shakespearean actor summed it up best, and that was Ted DiBiase. Everybody's got a price, Mike.
Thank you, Dave. And that's the first time that the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase, has been mentioned on this program in the 14 years I've been doing it, and to be referred to as a great Shakespearean actor. Tip of the cap to you, Dave from Vancouver. Well done, indeed. Dave brought up John Gibbons. And we will get to more of your calls shortly. But first of all, let's hear what John Gibbons had to say. Another frustrating Blue Jays loss. They fall 4-3 to the Angels. They've held the lead in the seventh inning each game in this four-game series. First three, and they've lost two of them. Here's what John Gibbons had to say post-loss.
Gibby, does it feel like whatever option you go to right now, you're just kind of, if it's not Roberto Osuna or Brett Cecil, you're just not exactly sure what you're getting out of the bullpen?
Well, it's been a struggle. You know, I thought we had the perfect matchup there. You know, Dell especially, he's been getting lefties out. And Kraus came into the game, you know, replacing Pujols. So, you know, you don't want to at least pitch to Trout there. So, and he hung in there. I think he hung a split. And he got the big hit to put them up. You know, it's still a one-run game, and then we just couldn't mount anything late, you know. So, just deal with it.
What was your assessment of Drew in continuing his recent pattern of steadier start?
I thought he was good. You know, he hit that one stretch early in the game. I can't remember what inning it was. We started scattering a little bit, but then he made some adjustments and came back. And I thought he was very good. You know, he got a lot, especially early in the game, got a lot of quick outs. They were up there swinging. Yeah, I thought it was a good outing for him, real good outing.
I appreciate this might not be an answerable question, but it just seems like every time you have one aspect of your team going, another part falters. You plug one hole and then another one opens up. When you're starting, pitching is good, your bullpen struggles. When you pitch well overall, you know, the offense dries up. What do you make of that?
Well, you're right. I think that's basically what's happening right now. And you know, generally when you struggle, you know, that's what it is, you know. You know, the key is win maybe a couple games in a row, start feeling good. But, you know, I mean, face that old crafty righty out there, Weaver, tonight, you know, who's a different style pitcher than he used to be, but he's still very good at it. You know, he doesn't give in. He's got that, you know, that slow rolling hook. It's really tough to time, you know, and he comes out of the same slot with all his pitches and he really doesn't give in. You know, I think we talked about that before the game. So, I mean, he held us in check. And that's one of those games, you know, you're just trying to hope you hold on because they got a good bullpen, you know. I think they're the top pitching team in the league all around, I think. So, you know, it's, you know, you just, you know, if you once you get the lead, just hope you can hang on to it.
John, did you give any consideration to keeping Drew in there to face Kraus? I know his pitch count was about 102 at that time. Or was that he was done for sure?
Oh yeah, no. I told you before. I don't get too caught up in pitch counts. You know, we didn't want to face Trout there. At least make him. You know, I mean, he's a very aggressive hitter. Make him hopefully swing out of the zone there. I think he had a feeling what we were doing, and you know, he had Delabar up for that reason. You know, I mean, he's been I mean, he's been getting lefties out all year, you know, with his that high riding fastball and his split. He just hung that one, and then, you know, of course, then he got the big strikeout of Calhoun, you know, pretty good hitter. So, I thought at that point Dell could come in and overpower him. I think the split just sat there.
When you're facing 85 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden, even though Smith and Street aren't exactly hard throwers, you get 91, 92, 93. Is that a difficult transition, you know, to make within the game?
Oh, yeah, definitely, isn't it? I mean, you look at Smith, he's a sidearmer, so it's a different angle. And you know, guys like that, velocity always plays harder because it's a different look, you know. And Street, you know, Street's just, he just carves you up, you know, with a slider, his changeup, depending on, you know, lefty or righty. You know, a lot of, I don't know, maybe you can compare it a little bit when Dickey's in the game and you bring a hard throw in or a different look after that. You know, you're so used to seeing something slow, and I think it can mess with you.
With the inconsistencies of the different guys that you've gone to in the bullpen, how is that impacting your decision-making in-game of who to turn to?
Well, I mean, these are our guys, and I have confidence in all of them. You know, I mean, we're just in a little rough patch right now, but I mean, these are our guys, and we'll ride it out with them. You know, we've seen you know, every one of them good at one time or another in their career here. So, just keep going after. You know, just keep attacking. That's all you can do. Things turn. It's a game of, you know, you get on those rolls, good and bad, and. You know, maybe something like a little walk-off win every now and then might help, you know, get everybody feeling good about themselves again.
That'd be swell. The Blue Jays have 7 games left on this homestand, on which they're currently 1-2, the last one of the 4 against the Angels. Then the Mariners are in for 3, and the Chicago White Sox are in for 3. The Jays at 18-24, and amazingly, I'm not sure that they've lost any ground in the division over this 7 out of 8. I want to see if I can find out, and I can. It's just going to take me a second, so bear with me for a second. It is amazing how poor the whole division is playing right now. How poorly the whole division is playing right now. The Blue Jays have lost 9 of 11 and 7 of 8. On May 12th, the Jays were 17-17, 4 games out of first place. They are now 18-24, and they've lost half a game in the standings. I mean, it just shows to go, yeah, how pretty they would be sitting if they'd actually played well over these last 8 games. But, I mean, that's an indictment of this entire division. Wow. Back to your phones, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Tristan in Toronto, you're up next on Blue Jays Talk. Hello, Tristan.
Oh, shalom, Mike.
Go ahead.
Long-time caller, first-time listener.
Uh-huh.
Talking about kind of benefits or positive signs of this team, Hutchinson had a good outing, a little rough spot there, but got back on track. Great outing yesterday from Aaron. But just Donaldson and Martin. Martin had a slow start, but he's coming around. I think he's 3rd in WAR in the league now and then 1st in the AL.
He was tied with Stephen Vogt in position player WAR going into this game, for whatever that's worth at this point in the season.
I think he's already worth 2 wins for this team. So I think I think they're both endearing themselves to this team. And I think if the rest of the team, as you keep saying, the league is playing, or the conference, or the league, the East, AL East, is bad right now, if the rest of the team can get to, say, Josh Donaldson and Russell Martin's level, I think this team could turn around and become a 91 team easily. And the second part of my question is, do you see this team ever adding statues outside beside Ted Rogers?
Yeah, you know, people have asked me that in the past. I would really like to see that. I think that, you know, you look at some of the other cities in Major League Baseball, and they've got little sculpture gardens and stuff and statues of some of the great players in the past, and I think that would be cool. It would be, a nice thing to do. You could do it outside Gate 12 over there, or on the other side of the stadium from the Ted Rogers statue, or right there with them.
I think that would be kind of cool.
They want a Joe Carter jumping up and down, or
sure, why not? Or Roberto Alomar with his hands in the air.
Gruber with the mullet would be nice. I think. That's,
I don't know. I don't know if I would go so far as to do a Kelly Gruber statue. I think there are a lot of people in line before him.
That's fair.
Thank you, Tristan. I appreciate the call. I don't know if it's fair to say you hope the rest of the team can get to Russ Martin and Josh Donaldson's level. Donaldson's one of the best players in the game. Martin's arguably the best catcher in the game. But you do have stars here, great hitters like Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Reyes. You have Devin Travis, who looks like he's going to have himself a great rookie season. This should be a good team, and right now it is playing like anything but. Peter in Toronto, you're next on Blue Jays Talk. Welcome aboard.
Welcome, sir. You know, I got to tell you something. You know, they've got to do something with Gibby. You know, if they've got all this great talent, all these stars, and Donaldson, the greatest player in baseball today, and Russell Martin, the best catcher, and superstars, and Bautista, like, what gives? You know, I don't think Gibbons is the right manager for this team. Who is? I don't know. I think we need a new manager before this gets way out of control, before we are 8 games, 9 games out of a wild card or first place. Now is the time to do it. I don't know what we're sitting on. I don't think teams are going to get worse. I think teams are going to get better. And I think we need to open up the purse a little bit and try to find out and make some big gets. You know, try to go after that, a big-name pitcher. Because there's got to be somebody out there. There's got to be a deal to be made somehow, somewhere. And and if there's not, then I question and thought this by maybe not being the right guy in Toronto either.
Well, you got a lot of questions.
I do. It's just frustrating. You got all these stars, and I'll tell you something. We're not moving anywhere. We're just coming up with stories and what ifs and excuses. Like, let's start winning.
Yeah, that would be nice. I agree with you completely. That would be nice. There are no deals out there to be made. Nobody with a big-time starting pitcher is going to trade that big-time starting pitcher in May, and probably not even in June. It's just baseball doesn't work that way, and has nothing to do with Alex Anthopoulos. You look back over the history of the game in the last 20 or 30 years, and almost no significant players ever have been traded the first two and a half months of the season. I mean, if you went to the Reds right now and Alex called them up and said, look, I want Johnny Cueto, I will give you Stroman and Norris and Sanchez, then you could probably get a conversation started. But I don't think
that's for a fact. I mean
yeah.
you're telling me there's nothing with all the teams.
They could go get Kyle Loesch.
Anybody's got to be better than we've got currently. I mean, we're wasting an opportunity. And there's going to be a couple people on the unemployment line very soon.
Well, that's what you want, I'm sure. I would like Absolutely. To ask, though, I mean, what is it that John Gibbons is doing wrong that you think he needs to be replaced?
It just looks like the dugout is flat.
Okay, that's not a reason.
Specifics because I'm not necessarily down there.
Right, but I mean, you want him to get fired.
I know they're not winning, and to me, that's all that really matters as a fan. You know, I'm tired of the mediocrity. I'm tired that we've got 4 Canadians playing today. I'm tired that...
What?
I'm tired of the fact...
There was one Canadian in the lineup today.
I'm just using that as an example. There's always seems to be a feel-good story with the Blue Jays, and I'm just all storied out with the feel-good stories.
Look, everybody wants this team to win. I don't take that away from you at all. You know, everyone wants his team to win, but again, just to call for the firing of a manager who...
But he's not doing anything.
But he's there's nothing that's going wrong that he can control. Nothing under his control is being done wrong.
I mean, Reyes, I mean, why keep Reyes year after year that the guy, you know that he's prone to getting injured for 20
Played 143 games last year.
Oh, so last year was the only year, actually, that he
the
had...
The year before that, he was hurt. The year before that, he played 160 games.
He seems to be injury-prone every year.
Seems and feels, Peter, are, yeah. I mean, there. It's important to recognize that that's what you're saying. Seems
and
feels.
All I care about, I mean, you can put a spin on it any way you want.
I'm not putting a spin on it. I'm just giving you facts.
What you're great at doing, I just want to say that I just want to see this team starting to win. And as a fan, this team is not great. And, you know, I just question them. Anyways, have a good night, Wilner. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. This team is playing like crap. There's no really other way to put it that you can say on a family program. But tangible, actual, real things, what do they need to do? They need to pitch better. They're starting to pitch better. Now they're not hitting. Why are they not hitting? Well, you're running out Chris Colabello and Ezekiel Carrera every night. You've got Ryan Goins and Steve Tolleson in the lineup every night because Devin Travis is hurt, because Jose Bautista can't play the outfield yet, because Jose Reyes is hurt. That's why they're not hitting. Is this a much better team than 18-24? Well, it should be, but right now it's 18-24. Is there anything that John Gibbons can control that he's doing badly? For me, that answer is no. Rocky is in Markham. Hello, Rocky.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. I understand the frustration with the Blue Jays fans and all, but honestly, I'm still optimistic because you know what? Like you said, they're only 4.5 from first place, and there's still a lot of baseball. And fans need to understand that this team is not fully healthy right now at this point, and I want to see this team fully healthy before I recognize what this team is, because we know that they're number one in runs scored and their pitching is starting to pick up a little bit. If they can find that continuity where they could solve the puzzle, but I think this team can click, right? And I agree. Well, what you said about like not going after guys like Kyle Lorsch or whoever's out there right now at this point. I wouldn't even try to go after Cueto because I know the Reds are going to ask for, like you said, three prospects, and I wouldn't do it. I would do what St. Louis is doing, is try to build through the system and, you know, pick those spots and build that culture. If you look at Michael Walker, he was drafted actually from a compensation pick from Albert Pujols, and look what Michael Walker turned out to be. He turned out to be, he's going to be the next guy for St. Louis. So I just hope the Jays fans understand that, you know, they're going through a lot of pain right now. But, you know, I want this team to, if this team can be healthy and they can figure out their pieces, I think this team has a shot at first place. And one more thing, I just want to see, I'm just wondering, like, if Daniel Norris is going to get called up, because I know he's picking up again. I would like to see him take another shot at the rotation. And I'm also hearing that Randy Wolf is also having a good minor league stint right now. And is it possible that he might be called up as well?
I would think that Daniel Norris gets called up before Randy Wolf gets called up. And I think Norris will be back soon, another start or two with Buffalo. And if they go well, they probably bring him back. But, like, you're not taking R.A. Dickey out of the rotation. Mark Burley's had three good starts in a row. Drew Hutchison's had two good starts in a row. Aaron Sanchez has been fine. So I don't know that there's room in the rotation for multiple guys. And I don't think you're bringing any of those guys up to pitch out of the bullpen. So I don't know that both Norris and Wolf are coming up. And as far as this team getting fully healthy, look, they may never get fully healthy. Jose Bautista hasn't been able to throw a baseball for close to a month now. He threw yesterday and today a little bit. He was taking ground balls at third and flipping them back in underhand today. He's throwing, and it's very controlled, and he's really taking it easy. So who knows when he's going to be able to get back out in the outfield. Jose Reyes is going to start a rehab stint tomorrow night. The Blue Jays hope to have him back on Monday. Devin Travis should be back tomorrow or the day after. Michael Saunders is going to be another 5 or 6 weeks. But who knows what could happen, you know, between now and then. I think we've gone through enough to understand that you can never say, well, at some point, this team's going to be fully healthy. They have to start winning with what they have. And look, they've had the lead in the seventh inning three games in a row.
Right, and I agree with you. And one thing I want to talk about is Liam Hendricks. I remember
real
you writing.
Quick.
Yeah, real quick. Liam Hendricks. I remember you writing the article that his velocity went up like a couple miles. But just recently, I just saw him throwing 96, which to me is a pretty I'm pretty surprised about it. And what do you think about that? Like Liam Hendricks throwing like a 96 miles per hour, and he seems like he's been one of the good relief pitchers for the Blue Jays. If they can find their spots, if they can, I know they're still struggling with the bullpen. Like I know Osuna and Liam Hendricks have been pretty good, as well as Delabar. But if they can find their ways to, you know, get out of those jams, because we know that it's been a struggle. I'm still optimistic.
I appreciate it, Rocky. I've let you on a long time now. I'm gonna let you go. But Hendricks was at 97 yesterday for a couple of pitches. Today he topped out at 95. Actually, he threw 196-mile-an-hour pitch, and it's really interesting to see this. I spoke to him before the game. He said he has no idea where this is coming from. He says he's wearing a performance mouth guard now, and maybe that's helping, but if it was, I think we should all buy stock in that company. The problem is the Blue Jays are searching for a reliable late-inning reliever. Hendricks, I think I can only remember one bad outing, and that was the one in Houston the other night where he served up three straight meatballs and two of them got hit out of the ballpark. But the rest of the time, he's been really good. Ryan Tepera has been really good. Roberto Osuna, of course, has been fantastic. I think, you know, we're coming to a point now where your late inning options, there's Cecil and Osuna, and then you got to start maybe the next one's Tepera. And you give him a shot and see if it works for him. And kind of throw Hendricks in there as well. Hendricks has pitched two games in a row, so I doubt we're going to see him tomorrow. But you got to start giving these other guys a shot. Tonight, Delabar didn't get the job done. You heard John Gibbons talk about how good he was against lefties. And we know that if Aaron Loop had been brought in that situation, he wouldn't have faced the lefty in Mark Krause. He would have faced Chris Iannetta or Colin Cowgill. Delabar lefties have been 0-for-8 against him this season, and Krause was hitting .150, and he didn't get the job done. So now it's time to try to get somebody else to get the job done in the seventh inning. Give it to Ryan Tepera next time. Give it to Scott Copeland. See what these guys can do until such time comes where a big stud reliever is available, and you hope you're still treading water by then, or maybe even being a little bit better than that. We're going to step away. When we come back, more of your phone calls. We may hear from Steve Delabar, from Drew Hutchison as well. And remember, tomorrow, Sportsnet 590 The Fan has a special edition of Hockey Central. 10:30 a.m., New Maple Leafs head coach Mike Babcock will address the media from Air Canada Centre. Listen for full coverage tomorrow morning starting at 10:30 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. More of your calls coming up. It is Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You already think you know more than Gibby and Alex Anthopoulos, so you must know more than Wilner, right? Blue Jays Talk with Mike Wilner after the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
There goes Pilar, strike two pitch, popped up into shallow right field, coming on Calhoun. He is there, he has it, and the Angels win it 4-3.
As the Blue Jays take the lead into the seventh inning for the third straight game and for the second time, wind up losing. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. The Jays have dropped 7 of 8 and amazingly have lost only a half game in the standings over that course of time. They're 18-24. You just heard Ben Ennis say 6 games under .500 for the first time this season. I'm not sure they were even 6 games under .500 at any point last season either. We're taking your calls. It's Blue Jays Talk, 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Mark in Mississauga, welcome to the program. Mark,
hey,
in Mississauga.
Yeah, how's it going? I just I heard you speak, and I think a lot of G's fans, we want the team to win.
Yep.
And the losing is frustrating.
Yep.
But I'm just looking at the team, and I'm leaning towards getting rid of the general manager. And I just listened to your comment, people lose their jobs over things that they can control. But I think fans in general don't necessarily subscribe to that theory. Like, sports is a bit different. You know, these are very well-paid people, and I don't think any fan should have to feel sorry if a coach or general manager loses their job. It's part of sports is what we generally just, you know, chalk it up to.
Well, I'm not asking anybody to feel sorry for anybody.
What
I'm suggesting is that if you're doing well as far as the things that you can control are concerned, then, you know, you shouldn't lose your job.
The only thing is that's a bit subjective. Like, you're entitled to your opinion. My opinion is that when it comes to it, I think it's just time. You know, we gave it a shot. You know, we had Burley and Dickey and Reyes. We were excited. And, you know, maybe by now fans have the right to say, you know what, these are great guys. Alex Anthopoulos is a great guy. But, you know, it just didn't work. And then, you know, for Melky, you know, we were all hoping he would get re-signed. And then, you know, Russ Martin's here, but it's not working. So my question is that, you know, given your statement, you know, my feeling is that maybe you don't let Gibby go. Maybe you fire the general manager and then you get a new general manager who hires his own guy. Or if you want to let Gibby go, you get a interim manager. But where do you think this team, what do you think the window would be or the circumstances would have to be for this Blue Jays team to fire Alex Anthopoulos? Like, what would have to happen in your estimation for the Blue Jays to go that route? I'll just hang up and listen to your comments.
Okay. First of all, let me just address what you said. I mean, you talk about what the fans think and the fans feel, and that's fine. Fans are more than entitled to want coaches fired, managers fired, general managers, whatever. Fans don't make those decisions with good reason, because if you let the fans make those decisions, there would be a different manager every 3 or 4 days for a lot of teams. For me, what has to happen is that he's got to start doing a bad job. He's got to start signing people with poor track records on hunches that don't work out. He's got to start making really bad trades, giving up talent and not getting enough in return. He's got to do things that are bad for the team. And, you know, the we can say that the R.A. Dickey deal didn't work out or that the Marlins deal didn't work out. I prefer to say hasn't worked out because still could. If they can rebound from this crappy start to the season. But they took the shot. He took the shot. And after, you know, when that trade was made, it was 19 years since the Blue Jays had been in the playoffs. And he took a shot at getting a team a lot better in a hurry. It hasn't worked yet. I want a guy who's going to take that shot. And really, are we lamenting tremendously what they gave up? People are in love with Noah Syndergaard. Fine. R.A. Dickey gave them 500 innings before Syndergaard threw a pitch in the major leagues. These are the prices that you have to pay. They held on to Sanchez, Stroman, Norris, Osuna, all those guys. So, for me, that's when you fire a GM, when he starts doing a bad job. You fire a manager when he starts doing poorly at things that he can control, when he stops putting players in situations where they're likely to succeed and starts making the wrong decisions from that. You look at how long did the Padres stick with Bruce Bochy, and then they finally fired him, and he goes on and wins World Series in San Francisco. How long was Tommy Lasorda the manager of the Dodgers? How long? You stick with guys who are good at their jobs, and hopefully when you put the right players around them, they win. That's the way I see it. More of your calls coming up. Let's listen in on Drew Hutchison. Hutchison, 6 2/3 innings, left with a 3-2 lead. And Steve Delabar gave up the two-run homer to Mark Krause. Here's what Drew Hutchison had to say after this game.
Probably stings, but can you take some more positives out of what you were able to do tonight?
No, I mean, we need to win. And, you know, I need to go out there tonight and give us a performance for us to win. And the offense did their job again. And, you know, we're not doing ours, and we need to do a better job. The offense goes out there every night and gives us, you know, what they need to do. And they did plenty tonight, and, you know, we didn't get the job done.
Did you still feel you had something left in the tank when you came out?
You know, that's things like that are out of my control. I just, you know, control things that I can control and, you know, go from there. I have no, you know, there's, you know, Delabar came in, you know, he's trying to do his job there. Unfortunately, he gave up a hit. But as far as that, you know, things like that are out of my control.
What in particular, Drew, outside of the fact you didn't win, leaves you dissatisfied with an outing like that?
I felt like I got off to a good start. I had, a long inning there with a lot of pitches. You know, I walked in a run. You can't give, you know, free runs without making them earn it. You know, I made good pitches after that. But, you know, I need to go out there and have shutdown innings and, you know, really give us a really good performance, and I didn't do that.
As a group, how frustrating is this becoming, and how do you kind of keep this from, you know, becoming, you know, really to the point where everyone's just down?
I mean, it's extremely frustrating. We want to win. You know, nobody enjoys losing. If they enjoy losing, then they shouldn't be here. And, you know, nobody here enjoys losing. We need to win. It's that simple. We can't go out there and continue not to get the job done on one, you know, one way or the other. You know, doesn't matter what it is. We need to win. Yeah, I mean, it's gotten better, but like I said before, right now, you know, I'm more worried about winning than, you know, anything else. I need to pitch better and give us a better chance to win than I did tonight.
So Drew Hutchison, who left with a 3-2 lead with two runners on base, says he needs to give the Blue Jays a better chance to win. Base is loaded and nobody out in the fourth inning. He gets out of it by giving up only one run, but he walks in a run and he's beating himself up about that. So, you know, I hear a lot on this program, people calling in saying, people need to be accountable. That's Drew Hutchison being accountable right there. And he did take the loss today, his first loss of the season, despite leaving with the lead. Back to your phone calls we go. Blue Jays fall 4-3 to the Halos. Dwayne is in California. Welcome aboard.
Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Hello, yes. Calling in live from California. You're a truck driver out of Toronto. I listened to the game tonight on Sirius Satellite Radio. And actually, I download all your podcasts and listen to them while I'm driving, and it's quite enjoyable.
Well, thank you.
Anyways, I'm calling about the Blue Jays. We got to have patience. Patience and patience. This is a very good team, and we will be better. And as you said earlier, there's only 4.5 games out, and maybe by the end of the homestand, we're 500 a game, who knows. But my call tonight is about a fresh look. He's doing a great job. I think John Gibbons is doing a good job too. But here's my point. If you are a fan watching the game and the opposition has their ace on the mound and the Blue Jays are going through the game, not really doing much to the pitcher, he's owning them. What does a fan want when he's watching that type of game when it's a close match?
You tell me.
The fans hoping that the opposition takes that pitcher out.
Right. But they're not going to.
A fresh look.
Uh-huh.
So my point is, Gibbies has given the opposition too many fresh looks. Every time you change a pitcher, you're giving the opposition a fresh look. That's my point.
Okay, he doesn't tend to change pitchers who are pitching well and have a lot left in the tank, though.
No, you're absolutely right. But you know, the announcer said tonight, when Texas Rangers went to the World Series twice there, their manager let the pitchers just pitch. whether it be 110, 120, 130 pitches.
Right.
And I realize Gibbs is trying to maintain our staff. I mean, if one of the guys get injured, imagine what's going to happen then. So, yeah, he's maintaining the staff health-wise. But at the same time, when I'm watching a game and I see the East pitcher, for example, is just controlling the Blue Jays, I'm hoping that the Blue Jays work the count as much as possible, get as many pitches out of those pitchers as much as possible, so that they'll change the pitcher and give us a relief pitcher, a fresh look. And that's my point, is that they're getting the opposition getting too many fresh looks.
Well, Dwayne, all I got to tell you about that is if the Blue Jays pitchers pitched better, they wouldn't get as many fresh looks as they get. Right? The reason the Texas Rangers and who knows how many times the guys actually threw 150, 120 pitches. I mean, myths become myths because they just get repeated over and over again and everybody believes them. But the Texas Rangers got to the World Series 2 years in a row, not because their starting pitchers threw 115, 120 pitches every time out, but because their team was really good and their starting pitchers were really good and they had really good years, not because they got to throw an extra 10 or 15 pitches every night. The reason that Blue Jays pitchers are coming out is because they're running out of gas or they're not pitching well. The counter to what you're saying is pitch better. If you want to stay in the ball game, pitch better. Plain and simple. Appreciate the call. I want to get to a few more people before we go. James is in Toronto. Hello, James.
Hello. Just want to continue on the theme of accountability and what impact non-players, managers, coaches, and general managers can have on the team. I like your answer about the GM's role. If I could offer a bit of a counterpoint, I took your answer to be that you sort of look at different trades and moves they make and assess them individually, and I would agree that all the moves that Anthopoulos has made have mostly been good. But when you look at each move in isolation, I think that's problematic because it doesn't allow you to kind of step back and think about the moves that didn't get made. And I know we'll never know what those are, but what
right.
I'm suggesting is you'd hold the GM accountable for that bigger blueprint.
But you also want to hope. I'm gonna let you finish. But you also hope too that the guy who makes the decision to hire and or fire the GM is aware of the trades that he didn't make, and the offers that were on the table that he turned down, and the guys he could have had but chose not to. Right, that's information that we don't have, but that certainly the decision makers have.
True. So trade by trade, you can't make a proper assessment. Instead, I think all you're left with is looking at how they assemble that bigger blueprint and how everything works together. And he hasn't been effective yet at putting together a kind of sustainably good team. But what I actually wanted to ask you was sort of a similar question, but on the managers and the coaches. What's your opinion on what their role in the team is, what their impact on the field is, and how you hold the coaches and the managers accountable?
I hold them accountable by looking at the jobs that they're doing. Like I said, the things that they can control. The pitching coach comes up with a plan. The pitching coach watches video with pitchers and looks for things that they can spot and works with them on their mechanics and stuff. But at this level, it's not about instruction. It's not about teaching. It's about maintaining and it's about facilitating work. The manager, the hitting coach does the same thing. It's about facilitating work. He's out there with guys that do extra hitting to watch them, to give them little tweaks that he sees, to watch video with them, show them this is what this pitcher does and this is what this pitcher will throw in these counts, and that's all really good stuff. A manager, one hopes, puts his players in positions where they are likeliest to succeed. And that's really all they can do. For me, I've said this a million times. It's not like hockey. It's not like football. It's not like basketball. It's not a sport where you can win by wanting it more than the other guy, where you can out-grit a team, where you can go harder into the corners or steal a ball or hit a guy hard.
It's not an effort sport, but a lot happens in between the ears. I mean, the approach that the player takes to the plate, even have the right mindset in the field so that in that second they make the right decision. I think there's a lot to be said about the way they approach the game. And, so in hockey, you want to get inside that player's head. Did they skate extra harder and put in that grit and put in that effort.
Right.
But in baseball, there's a psychological play too, that they kind of make the right decision or you know, approach the plate with the right mindset that they can make good decisions on what pitch to swing at and things like that. And so I don't think the manager is devoid of impact as much as I suspect you might think they are.
I think it's pretty close. And I think for that reason, you know, whenever you see a player get into an argument with an umpire, the manager comes running out there to make sure that he's the one who gets thrown out, not the player, because the player is far, far, far more important than the manager. Hall of Fame managers have talked about, you know, I think Sparky Anderson said a good manager can win you two or three games in a season. A bad manager can lose you five or ten. The impact is really not that great. And for me, as long as you have a good tactician, as long as you have a guy who's pushing the right buttons, far more often than not, you keep him there.
Okay, thank you for your answer.
All right, I appreciate it. I know that there are people who don't agree with that, but that's the way I see it. I think that manager as motivator is not, that's just not the way it works at the major league level. Michael's in Bowling Green, Kentucky. You're up next on Blue Jays Talk. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Mike, you know, I know everybody's kind of overreacting. It's been a tough stretch right now and everything. And hindsight can be 20/20, but, you know, with the struggles of the bullpen, and especially of late, and I know there's been, you know, there was a stretch there where the bullpen was much better than the starters. But do you know, is it not starting to look like maybe there should have been more addressed in the offseason on this bullpen? Because it feels like this mixing and matching just ultimately isn't working. I mean, I know it's May 20th, and there's still, you know, as of May 20th, there's still plenty of season left. But at this point, it feels like it just doesn't work. To me, I know Luke, I know Cecil have, for the most part, been fine, and they've had just a couple of blips that some fans tend to overreact to you on Twitter. But, you know, to me, the only one that I really feel confident in when he comes in to get the job done right now is Osuna, and we're talking about a 20-year-old kid. Everybody else seems to just kind of, it's almost kind of buckle up, we're going to take the ride. You know, tonight was a perfect example. Not that Delabar did anything terrible. It's just, you just, as a Jays fan, the way things were going, you sensed that ball was going to get down and they were going to find a way to take the lead. And I mean, when you look in the offseason, the Andrew Millers, the Pat Neshacks, the people that were available in the offseason that, for whatever reason or not, the Jays were not able to harness in. And right now, the six division leaders, the thing they have in common is they have the six best bullpens in baseball. And look, I'm not a GM. You know, I might play one on MLB The Show, but I'm not a GM. But it feels like that's something that's a lot easier to address in the offseason than to try to address in the fly like the Jays are doing. I mean, fortunately, the Jays look like they're in a division that resembles the 1989 AL East. So they've still got a chance. But as a fan, it seems kind of disappointing that this is something that I think everybody knew was a problem in the offseason and wasn't addressed then, and now it continues to be a problem.
Look, I started this show by saying that maybe Liam Hendricks or Ryan Tepera should be the late-inning option after Roberto Osuna, you know, next on the list behind Roberto Osuna. So obviously there are issues with this bullpen, and you're very right that there doesn't seem to be anyone you can really trust down there. I mean, Brett Cecil for me is fine. Osuna's been great. But everyone else, I mean, you might as well pick a name out of a hat the way things have been going, and you hope you're going to find someone. But to your point, Andrew Miller, David Robertson were the big fish out there, and they're making $9 million and $10 million a season, or 9 and 12, whatever it is. You should never have to pay a reliever that kind of money. Miller had one good year in his career, one year in which his walk rate was under 4.5. Pat Neshek has never had back-to-back great years, and he's coming off a great year. Luke Gregerson's never pitched in a non-pitcher's park, and he's making big-time money. For me, there wasn't a lot of good stuff to spend your money on in the offseason. As you can hear from the music, we're hard up against it. I'll just say this. If you look back, you say, yeah, the six division leaders have the six best bullpens. That's a coincidence. History shows that's not always the case. We'll see you tomorrow.